Take some time this week to watch an homage to classic Heisei filmmaking with us, and to honor the short yet important career of one of kaiju cinema's most famous leading ladies. Sit back, enjoy with us as we take a deep dive into the past 35 years of one very special actress. This is Kaiju vs. History, Hoshi 35.
Kaiju vs. History. This is your over 35-year-old host, Miles, and joining me is the super Heisei lover himself, Patrick. Patrick, how you doing this week?
I wish we could go back to Heisei. I wish we never started this Reiwa.
Oh, come on.
Heisei forever. Five ever. Hey, Miles.
Hey.
Another movie that came out while we were recording the podcast. We're looking at Hoshi 35, which came out in 2023. So this was announced and came out while we had started the podcast. And I actively, you know, well, I think for a while it was not available. I think it only just became available last year, but I didn't watch it because
May of 25.
Yeah. I waited specifically for the podcast, and there have not been many movies that have fit that bill. So I have been excited to watch and talk about this one for years now. Hoshi 35, Miles. When did you hear about this movie?
I definitely heard about it maybe when they were, because this one was crowdfunded, right?
It was, yes.
Yeah, I heard about the efforts, and, you know, especially at the time that this was being bandied about, you hear about these projects, and of course we don't get to see these until much, much later, especially when they're not English projects. Or American like productions. So I heard about it, but I kind of put it in the back of my head because a lot of these things will end up, at least at the time, did end up on Amazon, like your Rygos and How the Wind.
Not just Amazon, but sometimes Tubi. Like this one's on Tubi.
I understand that. I'm just talking about like back in the day.
Yeah.
And so
How from Beyond the Fog,
yeah. So I kind of had a peripheral, like, I knew this movie was happening. I knew it was supposed to be a kaiju thing. And then I kind of didn't hear anything about it until we kind of started doing the podcast. And I found out, oh, we got a bunch of people from like the Heisei era, the Gamera and Godzilla, like leading ladies in Mugiwara and Yashi, both of whom we were big fans of in their respective series. I mean, I loved Miki in the Heisei Godzilla films. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of that character. And I liked Maul as well. Sometimes not as much as Miki, but I still thought she was pretty great. And so I was really excited like to watch this project. I was very, very curious. And I kind of had a little bit more faith in this because, I mean, as of recording, I say I'd certainly favor the Japanese independent efforts more than the American independent efforts. Because there are less Notzillas and the like.
To be fair, there are more comedies that fit that bill than dramas, and this is one of the few kind of exceptions for Japanese independent kaiju films. This,
yeah, Damakin, you've got a couple of them, but I feel like, even though a lot of the American ones are, you know, purported to be or advertised as comedies, but they're not funny and they're very bad. These actually feel like legitimate efforts to make a kaiju comedy. And I mean, like, you know, our boy Minoru Kawasaki, you know, he doesn't always land the plane for me, but like he's pretty consistent, you know, like
He's got a very specific comedic voice for sure.
Yeah, because that run of like what, Outer Man, Kaiju Mono, and there was one other that I really liked from him.
Seafood Wars?
No. What was the one right after Outer Man?
And then it was Kaiju Mono.
Okay, I thought there was one in between that I did like.
They're like a year apart. It's crazy.
Okay, so it must be those two. I loved those. The Seafood one, we were both a little meh, but I still prefer, I would rather watch a movie like that than watch... What did we watch the other week? Mega Ape?
Oh, yeah. Well, I would watch any movie besides Ape versus Mecha Ape.
No. It wasn't Ape versus Meg. I'm not talking about the Asylum one. I'm talking about that garbage one with Tom Sizemore.
Mega Ape? That was last week. Yeah.
It was last week. And I tried to kick it out of my mind.
Yes. Yeah.
That movie hurt me.
So, to be fair, yeah, that we recorded that episode a month ago from when we're recording this.
I was not going to blow up your spot, but I'm like, oh, we didn't record it last week.
No, but I mean, as far as the episode, this is the episode after Mega Ape. Yeah. We went Mega Ape and then Hoshi 35, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, but I'm certainly more willing to give a Japanese independent venture a shot based on experience. Not that there isn't good independent American cinema or kaiju cinema out there. It's just the dirge of stuff that we have had to endure when it comes to the independent American kaiju scene has been a lot of excrement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So are you ready to dive into Hoshi 35?
I mean, you did ask
chat about
me,
this film.
How did you hear about this one? Is this one you just kind of found out for the podcast, or did you hear about the crowdfunding efforts? Or
I think I was, well, I had first heard about when we were starting the podcast, Nozora 1964, also by director Hiroto Yokokawa. And that movie was just getting, I think, SRS release in like 2022 or somewhere in there. And around that time, the director put out a casting call and started in on the fundraising, I think, for this movie. And this one, probably, I would say, of his three major kaiju films, The Great Buddha, Arrival, Nozora, and this one, interested me the most because I thought this was going to be kind of like more of a kaiju film as opposed to the other two, which are mixes of history of kaiju and the kind of history of, you know, filmmaking in a way.
Right.
Nozora 1964 especially is almost like a
mockumentary
biofilm. Yeah. It was very interesting. I'm super glad we have it on the list. But yeah, this one looked like it was going to be different. And we were wrong. Well, it is a different movie from his other two. But
sure,
the pitch was this, I think, was going to be a way to bring Umiyo Daka out of kind of semi-retirement in having her be like one of the major roles in this film. Miki is the character that has been in the most Godzilla films, right? Yeah. Of all time.
Oh yeah, because she's in every Heisei except for Return, right?
Correct. Yeah. So she was introduced in Biollante, and I would say was one of the main characters in all the movies, but her, you know, actual role kind of
dwindles a little bit.
Yeah, it there's peaks and valleys because there's so many other characters that they introduce. Like
she kind of ends up becoming a babysitter by the end.
Well, yeah, she becomes the guardian and like psychic link to Baby Godzilla. So her role gets a little bit diminished there, but I think she comes back in a major way. And so I had heard about that while kind of researching his other films. And like I said, I have held off on watching this film up until this very week, actually, when we're recording this. I've done a great deal of research about it, but kept spoilers kind of from myself, which I guess I'm happy about, but
not a whole lot of spoil.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the title of this film?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I am just...
It's been a month since we recorded.
I am out to lunch. Yes, Patrick, tell us what's in the title.
Yeah, Hoshi 35, and that is the, I think, exact literal translation, Hoshikuzu or Hoshi Shenjugo from Japanese, Hoshi 35. I think Hoshi or Kuzo is like another way of saying 35, I guess. I'm not sure what the actual translation of it is, but the director Yokokawa in an interview said, quote, 35 in the film's title holds several meanings. 2023, of course, is the 35th year as an actress of Megumi Odaka, so it is kind of a celebration of her. I'm pretty sure her first role was Godzilla versus Biollante, so 1989 to then. I guess it would be 88 is when she started. But it is the 35th year since the beginning of the Heisei period, and the year Yokokawa, the director himself, turned 35 years old. So a confluence of 35s in the title. Is that the amount of time that passes in the movie? Does it say 35 years later?
I don't know. Here's the thing. It doesn't tell you it's 35 years later. It just, this next scene happens and someone mentions it at some point within the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. 35 years elapses in the film, which is, you know, jarring to say the least.
It's super jarring because there is no 35 years later. It's just the scene cuts and you're like, here's an old guy. And I'm like, all right, who's this guy? And it's like, oh no, this is the character you just saw a while ago.
Yeah. And I will say it is a little jarring in the film,
extremely jarring.
I mean, we were like a half hour into this movie. And I was like, when are we getting Megumi Odaka in this film?
Mm-hmm. Well, also when Homeboy just went like full on school shooter on the village, I was like, what is happening right now? Like, I did not see that happening. Yeah, the weakest part of this movie is its script in that respect, in that I feel like we are given, like, bullet points of a much richer story. Like, we're given the bones, but even though the characters act like there is this big, long, like, adventure they had when they see each other again, and I'm like, y'all knew each other for, like, 6 hours.
Yeah.
Like, what's happening?
35 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, oh, it was like the Lord of the Rings. Like, oh, it's so good to see you and the adventures that we had. And I'm like, what adventures?
They went to a monastery 35 years ago.
And that is a little jarring. I mean, we've mentioned the time skip, which I know is kind of a thing here and there where, like, it'll skip time and they won't tell you. The Witcher does that as well, which I also found annoying.
Well, it's hard because they didn't really super style the actors, I would say, for the late 80s, early 90s, you know, which go back and watch those movies. And there's definitely some haircuts and style choices that I feel like they could have played around with a little bit. Yeah, I did get that it was kind of a period piece in the beginning for some time, but partially because it takes place in a ancient, like, monastery, you know, hundreds of years old.
Yeah, that's an easy cut to make. You know, when they cut and it's a modern time, I'm like, okay, this happened, you know, so long ago. Cool, got it. The cold open makes sense, where this girl understands that she's the village sacrifice and she slits her wrist as this comet comes down and the creature emerges. And we later find out that the creature in her, like, disappeared in a big ray of light. And the kind of belief system is that a sacrifice is required to this monster, or the beast of the star or something.
Yeah. Yeah. The beast within the star.
Yeah. Also, maybe it's SRS. Maybe. I don't know. But what I watched on Tubi, that localization needed an editor. Real bad. Like, some things were just not complete sentences, but some words were misspelled. And I was like, what? Who? Who approved this? Like, did no one just watch the movie? But so the idea is that if I guess a maiden sacrifices herself, the village will be spared from any danger that the monster might bring upon Earth. And if she does not, or the village does not offer an appropriate sacrifice, then it is also in peril. We have a standard kind of idea, you know, with some of these kaiju movies. And I think we saw that in, like, Daimajin a little bit, and we saw that we've seen this from time to time, and that's fine. What I buck against really is just the lack of fleshing out with this one.
I feel like maybe this story could have worked a little bit better if it was more going back and forth between the past and present. Yeah, it just, I'm going back and realizing, no, the time jump happens 40 minutes in the movie, so it's like almost
Almost done. This movie's like an hour 15 plus credits.
Oh, yeah. So it is more. Yeah. Credits are like 5 minutes. So it is more than half the film, which is so surprising because once again, we don't get to Megumi Odaka until that like 40 something minute mark where she's reintroduced to the story. Yeah, it looks like the 45 minute mark somewhere in there. She's brought back in. Yeah. So,
yeah. And the dude acts like he's seeing like his like childhood best friend or something. That's the wild thing about this scene is like, because the actors are great. Everyone does a great job in this movie. Like, unlike, say, most of the American movies that you watch of this ilk, like everyone legitimately is making a good effort and acts very well because these are people who were in Godzilla and Gamera movies.
I would say the dialogue and acting definitely very good. The script pacing is the thing I have the most problem with.
Rough.
And we don't get the cute baby Shikuzu until like the 35 minute mark. And it's very, and
we barely get him at all. Like, I mean, really, the monster has maybe what, 2.5 minutes of screen time.
Do you know the wrestling connection to this movie, Miles?
What is the wrestling connection to this movie?
Baby Hoshikuzu is voiced by Shoko Nakajima of Tokyo Joshi. And most recently, I think she's in Major League Wrestling right now.
That's awesome.
I think she's the MLW Women's Champ, or she was recently. But
yeah, I do like her a lot.
Little Hoshikuzu has like, you know, grumbles that it makes, right? Does it just actually have like a line?
Because she had a small stint doing some AEW stuff with Britt Baker and Rio and back in the early days of AEW, but I would love to see her again. She's a great wrestler.
Yep. Yes. Also of, you know, the Heisei era herself, because she was born in 91, but
sure.
Well, I was about to say, she's, I think, just turned, oh no, she's about to turn 35 herself. So she's right in that Hoshi 35 category. Very interesting story. I will say this movie reminded me of one of my favorite movies of all time, Your Name, the animated film with the, you know, the threat of a comet or asteroid hitting the earth and the shrine.
I don't see that connection. I love that movie too. It's also a favorite of mine.
The other ones that it also kind of reminds me of, especially Demaking, the sea monster. Also about like,
I can see Demaking,
an impending doom that the characters are trying to,
I think I mispronounced that title earlier.
Oh, and then this also made me think of the 1990 Ultra Q movie, which
I can see that.
Was a little more, you know, investigation focused, but had a similar setting, rural Japan setting.
I enjoyed that movie quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the effort. And that I think is the biggest thing, is this movie does make a really solid effort. It does not, I think, stick the landing, just because, yeah, the script is so awkward, and it feels like he had to take bits and pieces of a larger story just to make everything fit, because he couldn't afford to do everything, or, you know, just didn't have the time. I don't know, but it definitely felt that there was certain, like, if he ever released like a full script or a novel or something, I'd be very interested, because I think there's more to say than what we have on the screen, and it just kind of feels like actual full chunks were just removed from the story because, like, oh well, we can't do that, so we're taking it out. And
that's a distinct possibility. You know, this movie, like we said, raised its money online for, you know, to get, you know, money to pay the actors more than anything. They did produce a Hoshikuzu suit, and the baby prop was fairly simple, but still looked pretty good.
Cute.
The fun thing about watching movies that have been released recently is the film's website is still up. So there's still all kinds of like behind the scenes pictures and things you can see of them putting together the film, and, you know, sketches for Hoshikuzu. I will say, for as much as it was used in the marketing, the kaiju is just not in the movie nearly enough. You know, it does feel like the climax at the end should have been a little bit longer, because it's, you know, the kaiju comes back to Earth, and it is a very short conversation before it is return to, Hoshikuzu in Japanese means literally stardust. So it's another title for the film. It's Stardust. And it turns into Stardust in a very Mothra kind of way. It just kind of dissipates at the end of the film. Yeah, this is an interesting one. And I think once we get to rating it, we are going to have to kind of rate it on that same scale as the director's other two films, The Great Buddha Arrival and Nazura in 1964, just because they're, you know, I would say these are like three of the most unique independent Japanese films. And that's in a world where we also have Big Man Japan, you know.
Yeah, of all the independent ones I think we've watched, I mean, despite my love for Kawasaki's films, I mean, you know, I was a massive fan of Jellyfish Eyes. Like, one's probably my favorite. But yeah, I like what he attempts to do here. And I liked what he attempted to do in the last two films, even if they didn't always land for me. Like, it's just one of those people that I'm constantly rooting for. Like, someone give him some actual money so he can make a complete work.
Well, I love that he is a fan, obviously, of all these things himself, but just a fan of making these movies. So, I mean, besides the two Megumis who we talked about, Odaka and Kobayashi, this movie is helping keep Yukijiro Hotaru fed. He's plays the one of the elder versions of the characters in the film. And someone else I was just looking up. Jun Hashizumi? Is he? Yeah, who plays Mizuno was in Ultraman Z kind of recently, but he was Koji Shinju in Godzilla versus Space Godzilla and was also a minor role in Godzilla Final Wars. So there are just so many Heisei actors that have been brought together again for this project, or in the case of, you know, some of them across the lines of Gamera and Godzilla between those films. I just love Yujiro Hotaru. He's always fun in everything he's in. And honestly, I don't think you should be making a Japanese kaiju movie without him in it. You know, just give him a small cameo in every. So, I mean, he played like, was he in a Godzilla movie where he played like a alcoholic, or am I thinking of the third Gamera film?
I think you're thinking of the third Gamera film, but I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, no, he is in that movie, but he's like on his luck, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Things keep getting worse for him in the Gamera movies.
Yeah, because like I think in the first one he's the inspector, then he's like, it works at like he's a security guard
at the beer plant.
Yeah, he's just like some vagrant in the third one.
frankly, just ruined his life.
Either they're saying ACAB or they're just, it's character assassination on this man.
And of course, there is the connection to both Yuzo, the biggest battle in Japan, and the Howl from Behind the Fog, because Daisuke Sato, who directed those films, helped to do the character design for Hoshikuzu. So,
which you can kind of tell it's got his style. I think so. Yeah. I mean, the weird thing about I don't dislike how the creature was designed. I dislike the build of the creature.
Yeah. It didn't seem like it was made for action, you know?
No. But I liked the concept and the design of the creature. And I do think if you look, like, if I saw a sketch of that creature, I'd be like, yeah, the same guy designed these things. That's cool. I did like how it was supposed to look. I like that he makes these kind of alien creatures not feel just like Godzilla riffs. And that's always really fun because it seems a lot of people are doing some sort of Zilla or some sort of dumb monkey. And I like that there are artists out there who actively seek alternatives. And it's a cool creature design. Unfortunately, not a really great suit. Obviously, the baby version is very cute, and you can even tell then, oh yeah, you have no money. I just look at the eyes and I'm like, oh yeah, you're just paying them bad boys on.
big cute blue eyes on them, fresh. Yeah, I do recommend checking out the production stills on, like I said, the Hoshi 35 website's up. that has the original character sketches, the monster sketches, as well as some behind the scenes shots. These are all also hosted on Wikizilla, a great place to research any of your favorite kaiju. But yeah, a lot of the actors kind of posted behind the scenes photos with the baby Hoshikuzu creature. And yeah, I do like the design. There's not much for our veteran suit actor Akira Ohashi to do in the suit, but he was in Gamera 2 and Gamera 3, and also was King Ghidorah in GMK. So a, like I said, a veteran kaiju suit actor who's brought back for one last kaiju role, where he mostly gets to walk forward a little bit, and that's about it. There's some roaring into the sky. But yeah, are you ready, Miles? Start rating this film.
I am, and something tells me that we're going to have some different opinions.
Well, where are you on your personal enjoyment?
So, like I said, I do applaud this effort. I did enjoy my time with this movie as, what's the word I'm looking for, fractured as the story felt. I did enjoy the journey. This is certainly on the kaiju light side, because the monster, while I guess maybe a force in the idea of some of these characters, isn't really a present force in this movie at all. But you know, that script, I mean, it really constantly takes you out of the movie to where you're like, wait, what's going on, or did I miss something? And I feel like it really does a disservice to the story. And for that reason, I was not as hot on this movie as I feel you might be. And so while I did think it was good, I thought it was just like, this is a decent effort. I applaud it, but I'm not going to give it a higher score than a 6.
I mean, I don't know. You can see my scores. I wrote them in our notes here.
Okay. But, I'm not looking at the notes right now. So
I'm also at a 6 out of 10, a very slow, an emotional film, I would say, and I can appreciate it for there are, and I kind of want to watch it again, knowing, you know, not waiting for the older actors to show up and try to get it
right
from
right.
that perspective. But I will say the references to Heisei kaiju stuff happening are just great. The love letter, once Megumi Odaka does get in the film, allowing her to do her thing, and it ends with her like happy in the city, kind of like after the ordeal has passed, and she's got like a short haircut. She looks great, you know.
Yeah.
When she's not tied to this temple at the end. I do think this movie is just too esoteric for modern standard kaiju movie going audiences. So this, I think, would be a lower score for most people, but for me, it's a 6 out of 10. Yeah. I got mostly out of it what I expected, because I've watched the director's other two kaiju films.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting this to be like a sleeper hit for me, and it just wasn't. Maybe that's on me.
I was still hoping we'd get some kaiju destruction, a little bit more of the monster. But like I said, all in all, I was happy this film was made, and also that it is widely available to anybody that wants to watch it on Tubi. But yeah, a little unhappy with the final product. So 6 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And the technical score, I'm kind of in the same neighborhood. I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. I think when we're talking about small budget kaiju Japanese films, this is very good. You know, for the technical mm-hmm. aspects, it reminded me a great deal in the kind of reverence, if not scope, but in some ways, the scope of The Great Buddha Arrival, his kind of first film in this genre. But that movie felt very unfinished. Like, it felt like they, mm-hmm. you know, because it is kind of like a short film, it feels like they just ran out of money. But yeah, I think this script is good, but not great. Needed more kaiju. And yeah, it did. It seemed odd to me to go through the trouble of making the kaiju suit and not playing with it in the film, because you have people that can do that on the co-directing kind of staff here. But still, great acting, like we said. So 7 out of 10. Oh, one thing that bugged me is they did a lot of day for night shooting in this, which, you know, just set it during the day. if you can't shoot at night, it's fine.
For sure.
It's just so funny because so much of the other film production looks very good, you know. That's just always something that reminds me of TV from the 50s.
right.
What about you, Miles, for the technical aspect?
So I initially was going to go a little bit lower, but I mean, after talking about it, it's so good to see all these people again. And they haven't missed a beat. They're all fantastic. All the acting is not an issue of this movie whatsoever. And neither is the casting. Awesome cast. Awesome crew. Obviously, like I said, the script, I mean, just really sinks this entire movie. Like, this could have possibly been like an 8 or 9 out of 10 movie if you had like just that script really put together and maybe another 20 minutes. But with that, and I hate to say it, but like, it's not a good looking suit. When the actual special effect, I get it. It's an independent crowdfunded venture. I get that, but I will award those points where technicality isn't part of it. But when I'm judging something off of the technical and it does take me out of the movie, I have to like knock it for it. And that's the big thing. I've watched plenty of movies where I know I've, you know, some people are gonna be like, well, you gave this. I'm like, yeah, but it didn't take me out of the movie. And it wasn't a problem. This actively took me out of the movie several times with both the little baby version and the big one. And yeah, we didn't really get a whole lot of destruction, or, you know, we got some CGI fires and, you know, but I also disliked how like the director chose to the time skips personally. That's a your mileage may vary thing, but I really thought having some sort of visual bookend to help outside of someone having to say, oh yeah, this was 35 years ago. Oh, that's the same guy. Okay. And that this could be a problem with translation. I don't know. But so I'm staying firm at a 6 out of 10.
You know, one thing that I didn't mention at all was the opening credits looked amazing and had awesome music.
Yes, I did neglect to mention the music in this movie is fantastic.
I keep meaning to go back. Wikizilla has it listed as Yuya Yata is doing the music for the film, but it definitely gave, I think, the appropriate tone for the film. Like, it, you know, it's not action packed. It does feel like a more, emotional music.
I feel like the music here might have been why you made the connection to Your Name.
Yeah. So that, I mean, well, like I said, it's also about something, a meteorite falling to Earth and them trying to stop it from happening. So,
I mean, yes and no. I mean, look, I mean, Makoto Shinkai's disaster trilogy, or what's it called? Yeah, I think it's the disaster destruction trilogy. Like, legit, those are three of my favorite anime films. Mm. But the music reminded me of like Radwimps' score in Your Name, that really gorgeous modern piano music. And it's one of the things that does elevate the film. And I blanked on it for a second because it was why I was kind of toying with the idea of giving it a higher score, because I was like, well, the script is what sinks this movie because everything else is delivering it, but it really sinks this movie. But so, yes, I'm glad you reminded me that the score in this film is excellent.
I apologize. What was your score for technical?
6.
What about its importance as a kaiju film? Where do you think it rates there?
So this is where this movie sinks. This movie, as we've said several times, and Patrick, I know you've mentioned it several times in this episode, this movie is a complete and reverent love letter to the genre and to a very specific time in the genre. Even as you noted, it's in the name. And so having some of the most iconic actors from the Heisei era take part in this love letter to it. And even if the script just completely fumbles it, like, it's still such a lovely effort and something that I think if you are a kaiju fan and you are interested academically in kaiju eiga at all, this is a must watch for you. And this is where I'm a little like, yeah, I'm going to shoot for the moon here, but I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10 for that aspect. I think this movie is absolutely a must see, no matter how I feel about its shortcomings. I also think it's a very important film for kaiju fans to watch.
Miles, you're crazy, I say. I also gave it a 9 out of 10. I just think that is the niche that our director Hiroto Yokokawa is filling in making these projects. And quite honestly, I don't want him to stop. He is a executive producer, I think, on another film I'm very excited about that seems to be in the same vein, Brush of the God, that was crowdfunded, but was technically directed by the late Ezio Morassi. Very excited to see that. I believe SRS Cinema is releasing that or has already released the DVD. I'm not sure when it's coming out this year, but pretty sure I've pre-ordered it. But yeah, I'm excited for it because it I just like the idea of taking these elements of the Heisei era and paying homage to them, bringing them to the forefront, and quite honestly, for a lot of these actors, capturing on them on film, doing what they do best before they pass away. Like, so many of the Showa era folks, unfortunately, are gone. So it is very nice to realize what we have with these Heisei actors while we can. And yeah, this movie definitely does not beat, I think, our favorites of the genre, which are Outer Man and Kaiju Mono. Both of those we gave an 8 out of 10 to, but they're, you know, more tongue-in-cheek, and I'd say overall more consumable by the general public. This one, like I said, or like you said, just seems like if you're a kaiju film historian like we are, it is a must-watch, but this is probably closer to a 6 or 7 out of 10 overall. We are both at a 7 out of 10 for this film. I'm at a 7.3, you're at 7, which means Hoshi 35 is getting a 7 out of 10 for the podcast, which is good. I think an 8 out of 10, one of our favorites, Outer Man, is in the great category, and this is right behind it, and very good. Yeah, so that is going to do it for Hoshi 35. You can watch it right now on Tubi. You can get the Blu-ray or DVDs from SRS, and you can contact us on social media, Kaiju versus History. Go to our website, kaijuversushistory.com, rate and review our shows, or take a look at our Letterboxd, or join the Cosmic Crit Discord. It's our sister podcast. We have a channel in that Discord that is all kaiju all the time. Nothing but kaiju talk in Kaiju versus History. One of the last things posted in there was SRS Cinema's release of Ishiro Honda documentary, right?
Yes, there is a movie coming out, or I guess it's released as of this week, Ishiro Honda, Memoirs of a Film Director by Jonathan Blaise, which I am very curious about.
It's got to go on the list.
I think it does.
It's on there.
Yeah, it's hopefully at least as interesting, or at least as comprehensive as the Steven Rifle book.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Here, but I hope it does that and doesn't just pay attention to only the science fiction that he did, because we have so little of his other filmography, and he had many films, and I would love to see some of them.
Yeah. All right. So that's going to do it. What's happening next week, Miles? Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Oh yeah. Well, thank you, Patrick. And thank you, listeners. And we're going to catch you next time when we finally get a new Godzilla film from Japan with a new director in an old setting. Will the critically acclaimed and Academy Award winning film still impress us as much as it did in theaters when we watched it on the small screen? Oh, wait, I misread that. Okay. I'm just going to take that part. Will the critically acclaimed and Academy Award winning film still impress us as much as it did in theaters when we watch it on the small streaming screen? Find out next week as we finally get our long-awaited watch and review of History versus Godzilla Minus One.